Tonight, we appreciate everyone being here. I often think it's a Thursday night and there's a lot of places you could be, but your love for the Lord has allowed you to come and be with us, and we're thankful for that. I must admit, last night I left my bifocals out in the car, so I was preaching blind. And one time I did that before in a gospel meeting, and a brother came up afterwards and said, "It's a shame you didn't preach deaf." In other words, where you couldn't talk. And I thought, well, that must have been a good lesson. But I appreciate your comments about last night. We talked about David. And David is an interesting fellow because he actually chose to put himself in harm's way for God's sake. He chose to go out and fight the Philistine. Sometimes in our lives, we choose to make those battles and to overcome those challenges that we have to make those decisions, and we got to take the front side of it. We've got to be forward in doing that and take charge. Tonight we're going to talk about an individual that basically is going to fight a challenge being a victim. And we are victims sometimes. And so when we think about Daniel, I want you to think about the fact that in your life, like last night we talked and kind of challenged us, but in your lives, how have you done when you've become the victim? When you have to stand up for the Lord and meet that challenge of someone accusing you, maybe charging you with something, and wanting to punish you for doing something that maybe you were doing what the Lord wanted you to do. That's what we're going to find out tonight about Daniel. So when we think of Daniel, we think of a man that was successful but without compromise. But I want to challenge us to start with and think about, we have many accounts of godly men and women in the Scriptures. They're really worthy of our study, obviously, but Daniel is a man who that we've known, and we know him again. We meet him as a young man in the first part of Daniel. And he started out kind of in the preeminent eyes of the children of Israel in Daniel 1, 3 through 6. We also see that he was given preeminence later on over the wise men of Babylon. He was given power over all of Babylon as we look in Daniel 2. And he even received similar power over the Medo-Persian Empire in Daniel 6. Even though we see that, we have to look and say, what makes him that way? So I want to do a little bit of review of Daniel's life, like we did of David's life last night, to kind of set the tone of a character of a man and how he was able to become a victim but overcome the challenges that was brought on about that. First of all, let's talk about Daniel that's a man of purpose. In fact, if you look at Daniel 1 and you look at verse 8, we read in there that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So he purposed in his heart. We see here is an individual, young at this time, but he made a purpose in his heart. Have you ever set your heart to do anything? I've often tell people, I have probably around New Year's, we all make these New Year's resolutions, and we've purposed in our hearts. I probably have gone on 50 or 60 diets in my life. And by January 2nd or 3rd, I've gone off of them. I started them on January 1. Well, I had a good purpose, but it didn't last. But what about purposing in our heart to serve God? We're not going to violate God's law. Have we purposed in our heart to do that? Well, certainly we should, but every child of God needs to do that. He needs to be a person, or she needs to be a person of purpose. We're going to serve the Lord no matter what. We're going to see that this is challenging to Daniel as we go on, because Daniel himself has to live up to the purpose that he had purposed in his heart. When we face the challenges of being a victim, are we also that strong with our purpose, or might we give in? Daniel also was a man of principle. Now, you know, a man of principle, you've met those people. I can remember years ago, we lived in Mooresville, Indiana, when my father moved up there to preach, and we needed a car. Now, we didn't have a lot of money. And I remember he walking down the street, met the car dealer named Tom Baker. I will never forget this. And he said, "Tom, I need a cheap car." And Tom said, "Well, we've got a 1962 Plymouth," and it was 62. And my dad said, "I can't afford a new Plymouth." He said, "Hear me out." He said, "It has nothing on it, no carpet, no power, anything. It don't have a radio. It's $1,600. He said, "I don't have $1,600. Mr. Griffin was walking down, who was the president of the bank. My dad looked at him and said, "Mr. Griffin, I got a question for you." He said, "Yes, Denver, what is it?" He says, Mr. Baker's got a car for $1,640. I need a car. What can I do? He said, well, why don't you borrow the money? So they all three shook hands. Next thing I knew, we had a car. And I thought to myself, that shows us principles, right? It shows us all three of them had a principle. We made an agreement. We shook hands on it. Now, I'm sure there were papers signed later. I guess in 62 you signed papers. But they agreed to that. I think of Daniel being a man of principle and say, he refused to compromise his convictions. He had made a purpose in his heart. He was going to live up to it. If you please, he had a handshake agreement with God. I'm not going to break your promises. My heart is purposed. I'm going to serve you. And you think about that. And when we think about him not refusing to compromise, we need to learn from that, because many times we compromise. In these passages in Daniel, it all reads about he purposed and he was not going to break that purpose. He was not going to compromise. So here's our challenge to us. Just as we think about it, have we compromised? And you think about our world we live in today, and you might ask, we know people admire people of principle. We do. We admire that. But also, do we compromise? So let's challenge ourselves. Do you think the Lord's church has compromised in the last 20 years? And if so, are you a member of the Lord's body? Did you go along with the compromise? That's what we have to ask ourselves. Have we compromised the way we even believe in things? And I'm not talking about tradition. I'm talking about the scriptures. I'm talking about where it's understood in the scriptures what you're to do. Have we compromised that in our lives? Have we compromised in raising our children that we're looser with them than we were loosed with by our parents? You know, I don't mind telling you at all, my father was a preacher. There used to be tent meetings. Remember the tent meetings, some of you fellas and ladies that may be closer to my age than not? Tim, I remember a tent meeting in Somerset, Kentucky. I was 7 years old. My mother was home with one of my sisters that was sick, so I was sitting on the front row of the funeral chairs, I called them, those old wood chairs, the funeral chairs. And my dad was preaching, and a frog decided to join the service. And it jumped, and so I moved. And it jumped again, and I moved again. Well, it got to the end, and my father, without even breaking a sweat or word, son, if you move again, I'm coming out of this pulpit and whipping you. And then that was it. He kind of went along with the sermon, I guess. Well, the frog decided to cross the aisle. Well, Steve thought, well, that's interesting. I'll be able to go see where he goes. I don't think I even made it to the other side before my dad got me. We went to a seam in the tent right back there. Without missing a lick of preaching, I got three licks. I got brought back to my seat. He was walking back up, and he said, don't move. You think I moved the rest of the night? I'm not sure I even breathed the rest of the night. But compromise. We wouldn't do that today, would we? Well, that's not the proper thing. I don't think it ruined me. Don't ask my wife about that. But I think I look at that and say, have we compromised in what we're doing for the Lord? People admire persons of principle. Look what God admires. God admires individuals. He loves individuals who will stand by their principles and the words. Turn over to Psalms with me, if you will. Let's look at the 15th Psalm. The 15th Psalm, as we read last night in a lot of Psalms, there's so much to learn from these passages of Scripture. But in the 15th Psalm, let's pick up the reading in verse 1 and read through verse 5. Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your body hill, our holy hill? He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised. But he honors those who fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. He who does not put out his money at usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things shall never be moved. God loves man of principle. He loves us when we purpose in our hearts to serve him. And he doesn't want us to change. He doesn't want us to be the old term wishy-washy toward that. But Daniel was also a man of purity. And we look over back in Daniel, and if you look at the 6th chapter of Daniel, the first 4 verses, you will notice something there that about his adversaries, about those that were against him. And notice what they said in Daniel 6, verses 1 through 4. And when we do this, think about us. Think about our adversaries. Think about what they might say about us. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. And over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. That makes sense, right? They were not with him. They were his adversaries. But notice this next statement that was interesting. They could not find no charge. They could find no charge or fault because he was faithful. Nor was any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." And so these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said to him, "King Darius, live forever." And we know what happens after that. They set a trap, basically. And so as we look at this situation, Daniel was a man of purity. His enemies found no fault. How would our enemies find us? You ever driven down the road and somebody cut you off? You live in Louisville, I know you have. They cut you off. How do you react to that? Years ago, I did appointment preaching way back in the 70s. As I mentioned, I started down here outside Elizabethtown, Kentucky with my first appointment. I gave them satisfaction because they never had me back again. Now you think about that one. But I had appointment preaching. So my wife would always get up, get our children ready, and go with us no matter if it was an hour and a half, 2 hours away. Be all day Sunday gone and come home late Sunday night. Well, this particular time, one of my sons went with me. There was one of the children. Other children were sick, and Connie stayed home with them. So I had the son. He was about five, maybe four at this time. Now, that's back before you strapped them in all the car seats. That's when they stood up right behind you, or they laid in the back window, and you hit the brakes and see how far forward they could roll, things like that. And so it was a case where he was standing up, and we got into Indianapolis, coming from the east side of Indiana over by Ohio, and a car cut me off, and I said, "What are you doing? What are you doing that for?" And then they passed, and I saw it was four guys a whole lot bigger than me. So I just let it go. Cut in front of me, do whatever you like. Well, the next stoplight we pick up, and the one guy's looking over going, and Tad, my son's in the back seat, standing up going, needless to say, I could not wait for that light to change. And so as you look at this, how is it we take action when we think we have enemies? What do they think of us? A Christian is to maintain purity. Paul told Timothy, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example to the believer," in 1 Timothy 4:12. Am I that type of example? Have I taught my kids to stand up in the car and shake their fist at somebody who might have cut us off? That's a lesson to me, a lesson I will never forget. My son taught me a lesson. You don't do that. And so as we look at this, we are to maintain purity in all our ways and all of our thoughts. Daniel was a man of prayer, and Christians would do well to follow Daniel's example. Look over in Daniel 6 chapter and verse 10. "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed," this decree about praying like this, "he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day, prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." So I've got a question for us, for me and for you. If the government says we can't meet anymore, what happens? What happens? Will it be like maybe China where they meet in secret, or Moldova where they have to do that somewhat? Will it be that type of a situation? Will we meet at all? Will we be afraid to have them in our homes and have worship services there? What happens to us? What happened to Daniel was he had purposed in his heart to do what the Lord said. He went home and prayed just like he had purposed in his heart to do. Christians would do well to follow Daniel's example. Pray without ceasing. Where does that mean? Just in a closed building? We kind of talked about prayer last night. Prayer is important. It's us talking to our Father. It's making our supplications. It's thanking Him. It's even praising Him in prayer. How are we purposed in our heart to do that? Daniel was a man of prayer. Well, our discussion tonight is found over about Daniel and the lion's den. And I think about this, and this is where the victim comes in. Daniel was a man of purpose. He was a man of principle. He was a man of purity. He was a man of prayer. But when we get over to chapter 6, we see they put this decree out. Daniel went and prayed, and now they want Daniel to suffer for that. And so follow with me here as we talk about the subject that probably our young people are talking about back in their classes. Verses 1 through 3. We're going to do some reading here, so follow along with me. We had already read these passages about Darius set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, etc., along that line. What they wanted to do, they wanted to find charge against Daniel. They could not do that. So if you look on down, they wanted to come up with a decree. So we see that Daniel was their target. He was going to be the victim. Verses 4 through 9, as they did this, we look down in verse 8 and look, "Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree." What's the written decree? Let's look in verse 7. "All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions." There's the trap. Daniel had purposed in his heart. These people could not find nothing against him. So they wanted a decree that it was wrong to pray to any god. They made it general, knowing that Daniel would not go 30 days without praying to God. Would we go 30 days without praying to God? Certainly, I hope we don't go a day without praying to God. We want to pray to God. But that's the trap that is set up there. So as we look at it in verses 6 through 9, everything's in order. It's even said if anyone did this, they're going to the den of lions. Have you ever been around lions? The closest I've been around lions is went to South Africa. And we were on a combination hunting trip and a photo journey trip. I guess we take photography. And we stayed in a place that was guarded by 30 lions around the ranch. When we got there, it was really early in the morning, about 1 o'clock, and we met a group from Arizona there. Some brothers that were out there met us there. And we pull up to this place. We'd come in from Johannesburg. And the guy that's driving said, "Everybody sit still, be calm." He hits a little button, and this gate opens. We go through, we stop, and the gate closes. He says, "Now, the next gate that opens, we're going to go through the lion's den." I thought he was joking. He opens the gate, and here's these lions. They are guarding this place because there's unrest down there. And the fellow that owns the ranch, parents had been killed earlier. So he bought lions and put all around this ranch to guard, especially around where the gates are at. So we go through there and we finally get in and we're going, nobody's leaving this place tonight, we know. All those lions. We get ready to leave in 4 days to go up to the park and take our pictures. And we look down the way and here comes one of the lions. It got loose and they only feed them like every 7 or 8 days. So they're very hungry. And they're making a beeline right toward us. The fellow that owned the place was 7'4" and weighed 410 pounds. He was a giant of a man. Not as big as Goliath, but a giant of a man. He comes running out, waving his hands at this lion. Meanwhile, there was one of the fellow's brothers, a young fellow that had known him all his life, that was behind me. I said, "Austin, you get in the van." He got in the van that seats 12 people, and I shut the door and stand outside like I'm guarding the door. I'm not a very smart man. And then I realized, I want to get in this van. This lion's coming pretty fast. Austin has locked the doors, like the lion knows how to unlock the doors. Well, luckily, the fella scared the lion back. And I thought to myself, ever since then, going to a den of lions where you're engulfed in just in a closed area with these lions, really scary. Has to be scary. So the punishment of doing this was going into a den of lions. Who wants to go into a den of lions? Then if we look a little bit further in verse 10, Daniel's praying as we've read before. And he's doing this praying just like he would normally do. He hasn't given up. It's within that 30-day window. They're upset with him. He broke the law. But he's done what he's purposed in his heart. He is a victim to this because he is going to do what God wants him to do. And the people, the men, the satraps, the other administrators of the kingdom have set him up and he's been set in a trap. So here's the question. He did nothing wrong. He didn't charge forward. You might say, well, he broke their civil law. Well, when it comes to God laws or civil laws, which laws are we going to obey? That's what we have to ask ourselves. He purposed in his heart to serve God. So they were taught to pray with their faces toward the temple in Jerusalem, according to 1 Kings 8, 44 through 50. And that's what he was doing. You know, the trial that Daniel faced is much like trials we face today right now. And that is the fact that our world is saturated with people wanting to do things different from what God wants them to do. Do we compromise? Should Daniel have compromised and said, for 30 days I will not pray to God? Is that what I'm going to do? I'm going to give up and follow man's ways instead of God's ways? That compromise that is there, we face constantly in our lives. Daniel had a disciplined prayer life. He was not going to change that for some man's law or some trap that was going to be set. So you look at verses 11 through 14. Then these men assembled, found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. They went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? Well, the king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. So they answered and said before the king, that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself, set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. And I like the part to where it says the king was displeased with himself. I think the king probably realized, I've been caught up, I've been fooled, I've been led into this trap. And he loved Daniel. He liked Daniel. And yet now he's got something that's going on that he has to live up to what he made the decree. And so as we see that, Daniel is a victim, set by a trap. Have you ever done that? Have you ever been set up? Probably most of us look at it and we think, how would you do that? You ever been in a political situation in your work, maybe, where you're on the wrong side politically? And somehow you didn't know how you got there? You didn't know what the situation was? Possibly that's it. Maybe even in your family. I can remember when we raised our kids, the biggest troublemaker we had in our family was nobody. Who ate all the last cookies? Nobody. Who left the door open all night long? Nobody. Who left the freezer door open to where all the things melt? Nobody. I don't know if nobody was raised in your house or not, but we raised them in ours. Got away with everything because we never knew who nobody was. And so as you look at that, we think about this and think, sometimes nobody sets us up. Somebody did, but nobody's going to take claim for it. But they may be standing back looking around and saying, gotcha. That's kind of how I feel Daniel was right here, and how I kind of feel the king was. The king is probably thinking, I've been had. Daniel is a victim. And so instead of charging to face a Goliath, he now is going to face the challenges of false accusations, not against the civil law, because he broke the civil law, but these accusations that the king is higher than God and he should have been serving the king. That's not what you do. We don't serve our government before we serve God. We follow our government. That's what we're to do. We're taught that. We are to render under Caesar's what is Caesar's. That's wonderful. But not when it comes violating God's law. I'm not going to give in to man. That's what Daniel has made his purpose in his heart not to do. So when we think of that, let's look at verses 15 through 17. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, know, O king, that is the law of the Medes and the Persians, that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. A pretty powerful statement. Now, we made mention last night, I want to make mention again. In this life, we're going to suffer some things. This life is not meant to last forever. We're wearing down. There are different things of disease. There are different accidents. There are different just dying of old age. All of this is occurring. It's going to occur because that's how it's set up ever since the Garden of Eden. But notice this situation. Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. When it come time for God to deliver us at the end of our life, at the time that we face judgment, do we believe he will deliver us if we've been faithful? The king believed Daniel was going to be delivered. Do we believe God will deliver us at the time we need him the most? At the time we need his mercy and his grace together? Do we believe that? I think that's the challenge to us. Because if we do, we'll live our life accordingly to where we will know that he will love us enough to give us that. We can't earn it, but certainly by living in obedience to him and striving to do our best, we expect that because he's promised that to us, right? 1 John 5:13 says, so that you may know that you have eternal life. I'm going into the den of lions, it looks like. And the king himself is saying, don't worry, Daniel, your God will deliver you. Isn't that an amazing statement by the king? That's how much faith he has in Daniel's God. That's how much faith he has in Daniel, that Daniel's serving the right God. So as we look at that, let's look down at verse 17 again, or 17, and add that to it. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den. The king sealed it with his own signet ring, with the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. He's in the lion's den. As a victim, he's there. What a challenge. I often thought, Brother Roger Shouse, a good friend, he has a comment, the first 5 seconds in heaven. And I'm thinking about the first 5 seconds Daniel was in the lion's den. How would that have been? I don't know. I've never been in the lion's den like that. But I do know the thought process of the first 5 seconds in heaven. Wonder what it would be like just 5 seconds in heaven. What would it be like for us? So here's Daniel. He's going down to the lion's den, and he's sealed in. He can't get out. So as we look at that, it seems like a doomed situation. But let's look at verses 18 and let's read through verse 20. Now the king went to his palace, spent the night fasting. No musicians were brought before him. Also his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning, went in haste to the den of lions. So the king slept none, it didn't look like. His sleep went from him. He was fasting. He was troubled. No musicians this night. There is a problem. There is an issue. He knows he's responsible for this. He has fallen victim to this trap. But he gets up very early in the morning. He goes into haste to where the lions are at in this den. And then in verse 20, he came to the den. He cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? What faith! This king has faith in God because of Daniel. Now, you look at that and say, has he delivered you? I don't know about the guards around there. It's the king. They're probably going, what's going on with the king? Who can survive this den of lions? We set it up to where no one would. We set the trap. Daniel's in there. He can't survive it. Who's the king talking to? Has the king lost his mind? What is going on with him? And as we look a little bit further at the story, verses 21 through 23, then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. How would you have liked to be in one of the satraps, one of the administrators, one of those fellows that had put him in there that set the trap? He's been all night in the den of lions. The king comes and yells out to him. And you hear this voice coming from the lion's den to where it's sealed off with the rock. O king, live forever. I would have been scared. Do any of y'all go walking through a cemetery at night? Do you ever hear a noise? That's when I start running, even at my age. How would you have liked to have been there at this time and hear this coming up, and you've been one of those that set him up? Notice what happens again then in verse 22. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Now he's setting it straight. Now he's coming back and saying, King, I didn't do you any wrong. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him, commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him because he believed in God. So as you think about this, we can only think about the fact that Daniel had purposed in his heart. He stuck with his purpose to be faithful to God. The king fell victim to a situation where there were those trying to entrap Daniel. Daniel was entrapped. The king went ahead with the punishment, lamenting over that issue. And Daniel went to the lion's den, and God delivered him. Sometimes we're going to be the victims. We often talk about challenges of overcoming the Goliath or things like that, which is big, where we become the aggressor to do that. Sometimes we have to be the patient one and let the battle be God's. My wife has given me a little sign, this battle belongs to the Lord. I wish I could learn that more. How about you? The Lord is in fighting for us. Remember when in Acts 7th chapter, I often think of this story too. In Acts the 7th chapter, Stephen was given, we call it his defense. I call it teaching a lesson. And as he was teaching that lesson, they were pricked in their hearts. We found that in Acts 2. So you think maybe it's going to be a positive end. That's what happened in Acts 2. But in Acts 7, they were pricked in their hearts a different way. They picked up stones and starting to throw at him. You look at the last part of that, and it's an amazing thing that has helped me through my life at times. And sometimes I need to follow it more and listen it more and read it more because I get down like a lot of people too. But in that it says, Stephen looked up and saw Jesus standing on the right-hand side of God. Now, we and I would ask people, if I had just asked you before, where is Jesus? Most of us would answer and say, he's sitting on the right-hand side of God. No, he was standing. I don't know. You have to look at this and say, what a scene. Stephen saw Jesus in his mind standing on the right-hand side of God. I wonder if Jesus would say, hang in there, Stephen. I'm with you. I know those stones hurt. I know the end result's not going to be good physically, but we got you. We're living up to what we said we'd do. You live up to what you said you'd do for us. It's going to be over in just a little while. I don't know what was said, but sometimes I think in our lives, can we just think about Jesus saying, I've got you in my hands. I've got this taken care of. Maybe it doesn't end physically. I had a brother-in-law that suffered with a brain tumor, as others have. And I remember praying with him. I said, Ronnie, I don't know if you're going to get over this or not, but the Lord's going to give you healing one way or the other. And he said, I know. He said, it's just hard to accept sometimes because we want to be here physically forever. But he's going to give you healing. He's given a lot of people healing, but he's given them the spiritual healing, the healing of eternity, the healing of peace, the healing of joy. Selfishly, loved to have him back. He was a fun guy. But at the same time, I look and say, wonder what's happening in that place of paradise. Because that's where I believe he's at. And I think about, he's not worried about coming back. Met a lady down in Franklin, Kentucky at a meeting whose husband and two children had been killed in a car accident. She was not a member of the Lord's body. She walked down the end of the road one Sunday morning and looked left and looked right and turned right and came to the first building that was a church building, and it happened to be the Church of Christ. She went in. People met her and stuff, and she was brokenhearted, and she kept saying, I want to go to a place to where they tell me that God will send my children back. My husband, I understand, but my children, they need to grow up. I came down for a gospel meeting. This was about 6 months after this happened. She was still coming to services. And the local fella said, would you mind meeting with her? No, I don't mind. So we never forget him, the lady, myself, another lady, and another lady sat on the front stoop of the church building one afternoon. It was a beautiful afternoon. And just talking. And she said, can you pray to God to send my children back? I said, no, that's not how it's done. And I gave the example of David saying, you can't go to them, or they can't come to you, but you can go to them. And we talked a little while longer about that. About 2 hours later, time for services, she obeyed the gospel and was still faithful. Sometimes we need the truth of the matter. Sometimes we need to understand we can't compromise. That's what Daniel understood. He cannot compromise this. I have purposed in my heart to serve the Lord. And so I need to understand that totally. But look at verse 24 here. The king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast him into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. So when you think of that, we look at verses 25 through 27. Because here's what King Darius wrote. Those that made the accusation got their reward, it seems. To all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell on all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius, in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. When we think of that, think about this wonderful plan of salvation. As I told you last night, you're going to get this every night I'm here, this last slide. It's just, that's God's plan. That saves you from lions' dens. It saves you from being a victim on this face of this earth. And what it means is it doesn't mean you won't suffer through the lion's den. It won't suffer through the things of this earth. But this is the eternal reward. This is how we prosper. It's hard sometimes when we're living this life to get that down. But that's the way it is. And that's the way we need to understand. Not only about David last night, but about Daniel tonight. Sometimes we need to be the aggressor to uphold what God says. Sometimes we're going to be the victim, but we got to stand strong anyway. Thank you for your attention. I know it's about 3 or 4 minutes. I'm open. It's a class. Supposedly, I guess I'm teaching as a lectureship, but if you've got any questions or thoughts, I'd be glad to hear them, if anyone's got anything. If not, as they used to say in school, you've been such a good class, you get 2 minutes early of me hushing.